I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, a podcast produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut. As the Haitian people continue to recover from the recent political turmoil and natural disasters, we spoke to two people in southeastern Connecticut who are working to help. First, Karen Florin and reporter Claire Bassett, who has been covering the Haitian community in Norwich for more than 25 years, sat down with Enoch Petitom, who is Haitian and is the English language intervention specialist and diversity officer at Norwich Free Academy.
Well, my name is Enoch Petitom. In French, is Enoch Petitom. Actually, it means Enoch, little man, because petit is little, homme is man. So I was born in Gonaïves, Haiti. I was born and raised there, actually. I went to school there until probably the 7th to 8th grade. Then, you know, I went to high school in NFA. I graduated from NFA in 05. And then you know, went to school, and then I'm back at NFA now. It's like a full 360, you know. I mean, 180, I would say. full circle. I'm back at NFA as a bilingual language specialist, where we help the newcomers that, you know, learning English, and even those who are who speaks English but needs a little more help with academic. That's what we do.
How many Haitian descent students are at NFA now?
We have quite a large number because I don't know the exact number. However, the Haitian students are the largest African American population in campus now.
And how long have you worked at NFA?
Started working at NFA about 2 years now. 2 years now, but you know, ever since I graduated from NFA, I've always been, you know, connected to NFA. You know, organizing the Haitian Flag Days every year with the Haitian Student Club there, and I've always been in touch with Mr. Leo Butler and from some, you know, former students and current students, because before I worked for NFA, I worked for Norwich Public Schools for 10 years before I left to go to East Hartford Public Schools. So, you know, even when I was out of district, I still had parents calling, because usually I just give out my cell phone number to parents, because it's easier for them to just, you know, call your cell phone number, and then if they need help with anything like that.
I've talked to you several times about various activities going on in Haiti, mm-hmm. with natural disasters or political, and the students are always seem to be so well connected with their homeland and involved and concerned about everything from their families to their hometowns, old hometowns. What do you get from the students? What sense of connection do they have with their Haiti background?
You see, when the first earthquake happened, it was during school, right? January 12th, 2010. And then, you know, at that time, I was at NFA. Not NFA, but Norwich Public Schools, excuse me. And, you know, the next day, I remember I had to leave the school where I was to go to Kelly Miller School just to try to talk to some students who were very worried about, you know, the situation down in Haiti, because at that time there was no communication. There was no way. It's just the TV. You were just watching live pictures and not knowing if your family were okay. It was just, you know, heart-wrenching. But now, because we're out of school, it's just that, you know, the students are not there physically at the school. You can't connect with them physically, but I've been in talk with some students. Some of them I see in the community. Some parents I see in church. You know, we talk, but it's just deja vu all over again, you know.
Yeah. What have you heard from your family in Haiti after this recent earthquake?
See, my family in Haiti, we are from the north, the northern part of Haiti. Although they felt the earthquake, but they are not as affected as the people in the south. The people in the south, I have friends who have lost, you know, various family members. I have friends from Lekai, from Jeremy, who it's just heart-wrenching. who've lost everything they possibly own. And I have some tenants that from Jeremy that, I just don't know what to say to them to console them. You know, it's just, it's a sad situation. It's just, you know, it's a natural disaster, but it's just a sad situation. It's like Haiti no seems to catch a break from anything that's happening.
Yeah, that's kind of what I want to ask you about next. I mean, how does a country recover from so many things? It just seems like every time they start recovering from something, something else happens, whether political or natural.
You know, I mean, if we go back in history, since the early 1700s, 1791, that's when the Haitian Revolution started. That lasted until 1803, November 1803, the last battle for independence. We could tell that the Haitians are a resilient people. You know, they bounce back quickly from things, even though, naturally, we've been hit so hard with man-made disasters, as we could go back to history, natural disasters, but, we're still standing. And then from the ashes, from the rubble, we should build again,
Yeah. One of the concerns that we've been hearing is that as the disasters happened and people send aid, it never seems to get to the people who need it the most. Do you have that sense or of frustration, or do you think it?
That clearly happens. If we remember during the first earthquake, I believe it was under President Obama, and then the two ambassadors were Mr. Clinton and Mr. Bush, that was coordinated the whole help and relief or whatnot. Still, even with the Red Cross, still today, the people who were hurt the most did not get that help. That's the reason why, I've been trying to get in contact with local people where we could help people one-on-one. Instead of going through big organization like the Red Cross or whatnot, not that I don't trust people, but, when you got burning hot water, when you see cold water, you always run.
Yeah, it seemed like the last time people were saying trust the Red Cross, the established organizations, and that would be the better way to go. But that didn't always work.
Right. I mean, Claire, I believe you were there when we organized the fundraising activity we did at NFA right after the 2010 earthquake. I believe it was the same month that we collected a large amount of money. We donated to the Red Cross. The reason why my team and I, we selected the Red Cross to donate that money to, because we have local Haitian churches here and throughout Norwich and London. But we did not want to give the money to one church to go to one particular place, but we wanted to go with a very neutral, organization. Till today, I'm still asking myself if that was the best decision to do.
So would you talk a little bit more about the connection between, Norwich and the people of Haiti? And why did people choose Norwich? And how hospitable of a community are we for the Haitian community?
You see, that's a very interesting question. You know, Haitians have been coming to Norwich for a long time now. I believe the Norwich historian had put out some information about the connection with Haiti and Norwich. But more recently, Boston and New York are very, Haitian-centered. So when the casinos opened up here, Haitians started coming up to Norwich because Foxwood was the first one that opened. It's just word of mouth, and everybody's always looking to relocate to find a better opportunity. And families have been coming from migrating over to Norwich since then. And We have so many people from the South here, from Petit Goave, from Okai, and then, you know, from various parts of Haiti, but mostly from Petit Goave and Norwich. And then, you know, the word of mouth, the family's coming over. They just stay here. Family's coming to visit, especially families from Brooklyn, right?
Talk a little bit about the Haitian culture. The images that we have are very colorful, very bright, very lively, very, very vibrant, very upbeat. And that people have remained positive even through all these hardships.
You know, I love history because history, you know, is just a way of connecting the dots. If we go back to, you know, to the 1600, even 1492, you know, when Columbus came to the island, right? The people, you know, they received them with open arm, you know. If we go fast forward in the 1500s when the English came, the Dutch came to Haiti, it was the same, you know, welcome that they received. If we go back to the 1600s, when the French came to Haiti, it was again the same, you know, kind of welcome that they received from the Haitian people. The Haitian people, we are very welcoming. I would say Haiti is like the melting pot, right? Where we have a little bit of, you know, of the different cultures mixed in our culture, but we're more associated with the African culture because when the slaves came to Haiti, it was mostly, you know, slaves that were in the island because at that time, you know, the Indians were almost extinct. And then, you know, the slaves from Africa were, from different tribes actually, were the one that put together liberate the island, and not only the island, but if you look at it, the whole Latin American continent, you know, from Venezuela to Colombia to, you know, you name it, Haiti has a part in all this, you know, in all this liberation, or I would say freedom. And if we're gonna go further, Haiti was, you know, we know Haiti was the first black republic, but it didn't stay there. If we wanna go and check out the constitution, when Mr. Dessalines had said that anybody who step foot on this island, you know, you'll be free. That's the reason why a lot of, you know, uprising happened right after, you know, 1804. But to go back to your questions, I know I'm going all over, right? To go back to your questions, our culture, is very vibrant. We love to have fun. You know, you love to have fun to represent where we come from, but at the same time, it's to represent our roots, of Mother Africa. Haitians are, you know, they're very, what would I say, very proud of the culture, and they're very proud of, you know, what they have contributed to the world. And with that being said, it's just that, you know, we just love to have fun and we just love to show pride.
And the food. Talk about the food.
Man, you're getting me hungry already. you know, Haitian food is just that, I don't know. I don't want to say it's the best, but to me it's the best. I don't want to be biased, but, you know, the rice and beans, the chicken, it's just it, you know. But if we look at, you know, foods from a neighboring country, Dominican Republic, it's almost the same. Mm-hmm. If you go, I've traveled a lot, right? If you go down to Colombia, it's almost the same, right? If you go down to Brazil, it's just a little more spicy, you know. It's just that if you really, we are all interconnected somehow. No matter where you're from in this world, we are all interconnected. You know, you might have a little more European blood, I might have a little more African blood, but if we go to the roots, we are interconnected somehow, you know? Haitian food is just that, it's just a mixture of African food and Latin food because, again, of the, you know, political system, our situation that happened in Haiti, you know, with the different cultures coming in, to occupy the country. So everybody left a little taste in the island, you know. So, the Haitians, we like to eat a lot of spices, and they like to drink wine, just like the French, you know. So it's just that it's a mixture, you know.
And the language, what is there? Is there one dominant language? Is there dialects?
Let me put it this way. Officially, Haiti has two official languages, right? Which is French and Haitian Creole. Haitian Creole is like it's a mixture of French, Dutch, English, African dialect, Spanish, because certain words in Haitian Creole. Or just English word, just like canister, right? That's an English word, but we use it in Creole. Just like the word buscar, al busquer ça pour moi, go get this for me. You know, we use it in Creole. But mostly, it's about, I'll say 60 to 65% French, and then the French language is the official language. And so French and Creole are official languages, but everybody in Haiti speaks Creole. But as far as French is concerned, and some people would disagree with me on that, and I'll be happy to debate them on that. And the whole country speaks Haitian Creole, from grandma to little kids, everybody speaks Haitian Creole. However, when it comes to French, you have to go to school to learn French. Everything in the country is in French. The court system, the political system, the books, everything in schools are in French. They only started teaching Creole not too long ago in school.
And what's the education system in Haiti?
It's based on the French system. It's based on the French system in Haiti. Like I said, everything is in French. Books, and you know, we have the options to put your kids in school at 3-4 years old. And they stayed in school until 18, 19, almost the same as here. However, in Haiti, if you don't pass a class, you repeat the class. So instead of finishing school around 18, 19, you have people who's 20, 22, 23, who are still, you know, finishing, you know, what we call high school here.
Is it free education for younger grades?
You see, the Constitution says that education should be free, but it is not entirely free. Most students in Haiti go to private school. We have the state school, which should be free, but they're not entirely free. The last president we had, the one prior to former Mr. Jovenel, he tried to come to satisfy the Constitution, pretty much, because everybody's entitled to a free education. That's what the Constitution says, right? So he tried to make it, to do that. It did not happen, and I don't foresee it happening for a long time, because school in Haiti is like a bank, you know? It all depends on what school you went to, how much did you pay a month, and, you know, it's all the class system. You know, it's a class system in Haiti still.
How about college?
College in Haiti, which is called university. What we call college here in Haiti, it's university, right? So when you get to ninth grade in Haiti, they call it college, right? So when you finish 13th grade, here we got 12, in Haiti we have 13, right? Mm-hmm. When you finish that, then you go to university, right? So what we call college here. So it all depends on how much money you have and what kind of school can your parents afford. There are some good schools in Haiti, there are some okay schools, and there are some not so good schools in Haiti.
Is it prohibitively expensive? Well, university?
It all depends, right? So, for example, $100 for me might not be a lot of money, but $100 for somebody who was not working might be a lot of money. Just like $2 million for me, I would like, oh, what is this? But for somebody who grew up in money, that would not be a lot of money for them. But it's all, like I said, it all depends on your financial situation. Because we have, for example, we have families in Haiti, right? Let's say a mother has three children. And she's the sole provider. She's not working. She's probably selling, you know, goods and things like that, trying to feed her family, put her kids to school, you know, pay for where she stays at. What kind of education can she really, you know, give those children? But again, Haitians, they're very animated, they take seriously education. Very serious. So a parent will actually stay hungry to put the kids to a good school, you know. So it's all a fluid situation.
So we have to conclude soon, but if you had your dreams of the perfect Haiti, of the big fix, of, you know, the best the country could be, what would that look like?
That's a great question. You see, to me, I would like to see a Haiti that's fully independent. I don't want to get too political. When I said fully independent, if a country, you cannot assure your own security, you cannot feed your own people, then, you know, you cannot make your own decisions 100%, as we all know. I don't want to get too political here. It's just that, to me, on paper, you are independent, but really, you're always looking at, you know, the big brother to help you make decisions. And that is very sad, because when America makes a decision, America makes the decision. When England makes a decision, England makes a decision, right? When France makes a decision, they make their own decision. Why can't the other countries do that? Right? Why can't Africa be making their own decision without the big brothers coming in to play, you know, arbitrage? So to go back to your questions, I don't want to get too off topic here. To me, I would like to see a Haiti where, you know, where people have the basic needs meet, right? Like infrastructure, you know, modern housing. Education, of course, you know, full security, where people are not depending on others to support them, and, you know, in job security. Haitian people, they work hard, just don't have the opportunity to do, you know, as, you know, everybody else. And the thing is, I'm not trying to play a victim here. You know, the same thing that's happening in Haiti happens to different countries in the world, right? For example, if we look at the situation in Colombia, that's you know, erupting. I was just in Colombia right before the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. And everything was going okay, and then right after that, you see the situation there. You know, and our corrupt politicians always have a hand to play in the suffering of the people. And I say that to say, you know, I'm not saying that just for Haiti, but throughout the world, we've seen what corruption could do, you know.
Thank you so much for coming and for telling us about Haiti, and we would like to continue to learn. So we're glad we can rely on firsthand encounters like this. Thank you.
I thank you very much for having me, and thanks for the hospitality. And one thing I wanted to add is that since you know, the assassination of the president, right? Even right before that, there were a lot of Haitians migrating to the Dominican Republic, right? Although the situation there, it's better than the situation in Haiti, right? The living situation there, but however. I've seen it firsthand, you know. I have a lot of Dominican friends, and this is a very touchy topic, right? But it's like seeing, you know, the migration of so many Haitians going to DR. It's just sad. It's just sad in a way that, well, I can't live in my country, then I'm just gonna find somewhere to go, just to, you know, to make a living. Some of them we talked to, my uncle has about 3 churches in Haiti. So I'm always in DR. So I'm always in DR every year. Every year I'm in DR, you know, helping out the people, not just Haitians, but Dominicans as well. It's just that, you know, some Haitians are not well received in DR. It's just sad because forever, for eternity, Haiti and DR, we are bound to be in the same island. So it's just that's just an SOS, you know. It will be better if we work together, you know, to strengthen both countries, because both countries have their own problem. But if we work together, then we could, you know, strengthen the whole island, and then, you know, maybe go back to what we used to call Hispaniola. It's just sad. It's sad, but I have great hopes that future generations will be able to sit together around the table, and then you know, and then just live happily ever after.
Perfect way to end. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Karen Florin also had a conversation with D. Susan Wallace, who is the executive director of the Norwich Catholic Diocese Outreach to Haiti program. The program employs nearly 24 staff in the Chris Roy neighborhood of Port-au-Prince and operates a medical clinic and school.
Good morning, Susan, and thanks for coming. First of all, could you talk in general about the diocese's work in Haiti?
I would be glad to. I was fascinated to learn that lay people, lay Catholics in the Diocese of Norwich decided to visit Haiti in the 1980s. And they were so involved with the experience, they loved the Haitian people, that they came back to Connecticut and decided to create a ministry called Haitian Ministries. In the meantime, another ministry became involved with the Diocese of Norwich, Hospice St. Joseph, which was founded by the Congregation of the Sisters of St. Joseph in Indiana. So these two ministries operated side by side, literally, both in Haiti and in the Diocese of Norwich. After the 2010 catastrophic earthquake, which killed more than 250,000 people, the bishop of the Diocese of Norwich decided to merge the two ministries together and created Outreach to Haiti. So combined, we have about 35, 36 years of history of working on the ground in Haiti.
In the last decade since that devastating earthquake, things have only seemed to deteriorate in Haiti. Can you tell me specifically now about the recent events and how your work has been affected?
Yes, I can. I was able to visit Haiti twice in 2019. Beginning in 2020, because of COVID and because of escalating violence in the country, it was difficult to plan trips to go down there. Haiti is going through a change of power. The country has a history of some unsettling transfers of power from one president to the next. So they were gearing up for that when most recently in July, President Moïse was assassinated while in office. The last time a sitting president in Haiti was assassinated was 1912. So this was a fairly significant event, even though other presidents have been assassinated. So starting with that period of time and the fact that gang violence has been escalating, on top of that, as everyone knows, we've just had a significant earthquake in southwestern Haiti. I think there's one word that really encapsulates Haitians living in Haiti, and that is that they are resilient, that they have faced challenges most of us would not even see in a long lifetime that they face on an almost daily basis, and they are resilient, they have hope for the future, and they are thankful for those NGOs and nonprofits who work in Haiti and are helping them to develop, grow, and become better people, and by becoming better people, hopefully a better nation.
And I read a bit earlier on your webpage about construction of a new, it sounds like a community center that will accommodate all kinds of needs. Has that been able to go forward despite all the turmoil?
It has, and we're thankful for that. We lost two different buildings in the 2010 earthquake. We thought that we would be able to salvage them and learned after the earthquake that we would not, so that we have a new building that just went up. We work in a neighborhood called Chris Roy, or Christ the King. It's a neighborhood of 60,000 men, women, and children in Port-au-Prince. And we have been in that neighborhood, as I mentioned, for about 35, 36 years, maybe a little longer. And it is a symbol of hope, both for our ministry and for the people living in Haiti, that we are there for the long haul to bring what aid and service we can. Our motto for Outreach to Haiti is helping Haitians help Haitians.
I love that. And I know that we do have a significant population of Haitians here in Norwich area and
yes.
Southeastern Connecticut. Are they involved with the diocese's outreach work?
I think some of them are involved indirectly. A lot of Haitians throughout the years have left Haiti to seek better living conditions in other countries. And like many countries throughout the world where their populations are forced to do this, that Haitians send money back home to help their families and their extended families. So that really is number one on their list.
And can you just tell us about the conditions that you observed during your trips in 2019?
Okay, well, I'd like to first say that I was there in the late 1980s. And so that there are some exciting things. There are more trees being planted and not chopped down in Haiti because the government made it illegal to chop down trees. Trees were chopped down to create charcoal because charcoal is a fuel that people use to be able to cook their meals and heat their homes. The average Haitian lives on less than $2.51 a day, which comes out to about $2,000 or less annually. So the conditions aren't the best. I'd say about 70% of Haitians live on less than $2,000 a year. We are helping smart, creative people who just were born into a country where there just aren't a lot of opportunities. So there are not a lot of businesses that want to establish themselves in Haiti until they figure out peaceful transfers of power so that their investments won't be disturbed.
And you had mentioned increased gang violence and activity. Does that impact that neighborhood where you are especially active, Christ Roy?
Yes. No, actually, I don't think that it has. I can't speak for the neighborhood as a whole, but the neighbors know that we've been there, that we're there to serve them, and they're appreciative of that. Our clinic, which serves people, is probably the only clinic in the neighborhood. Also attracts people from surrounding communities. We sponsor about 200 young people each year to attend primary, secondary, or post-secondary school. Once we start sponsoring a young person, we try to stay with them so that they can go on to university and to give them that opportunity for an education. On their end, they work hard to study, earn good grades so that they continue going to school. A leading cause of death in children age 5 and younger is malnutrition, so that we have approximately 200 or more young people age 5 and younger who come into our food and nutritional supplement program. We also help expectant mothers, especially in their third trimester, for the same reason. We do food kits for the poor because at any given time with different challenges being faced, Haitians run short and need food. So we provide food kits for students, their families, for the people we serve in the clinic, for their families. And we have 13 parishes in the United States, 7 of them here in the Diocese of Norwich, who twin with parishes in and around Port-au-Prince so that they support schools, they support clinics, and they're supporting people in their everyday lives. And we have one school involved with this project.
And what school is that?
Mercy High School.
Oh, I'm actually a Mercy graduate.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that. So we're looking at a special program this year where we will try to involve the girls at Mercy High School more closely with the young women that we do sponsor to go to school. We also have young men, of course, but we wanted to do a special program for Mercy High School.
I can't think of a better cause. You've given many examples of that resilience that you talked about earlier on. Do you have personal connections with some of the people of Haiti and sort of regular correspondence?
I do in terms of our staff and trying to be there, not just on a professional level, but for different times to be there. I was very touched by our director of operations, who recently shared that knowing the Kriswa, which is a Creole for Christ the King, knowing the Kriswa community and its surroundings rely heavily on our help to survive. And on the basis of our commitment to serving the poorest and most vulnerable people, our staff, like warriors, have braved dangers, driving through inflamed tires, dodging rock shots, moving through violent demonstrations to come and support the work that we do in the neighborhood. And I want to also just share with you that there was an artisan from Quatabuquet who wrote to one of our board members. And he wrote a long note. I'll just share a very small section of it. I thought that he captured well what many Haitians do think. He mentioned the fact that he considers America great because it's not only great for itself, but also for many other countries in the world. And he talked about the fact that he and many of his friends know that the United States, things could be far worse in Haiti if it wasn't for the help that comes in from the United States. Haiti sits on our doorstep. It's our neighbor. It's like walking out your front door and seeing Haitians in front of you.
Thank you so much for describing this. And before we conclude, is there anything else you'd like to say?
I think it's just important to look at what people have to offer instead of looking at the life that you live and then looking at another country and saying, gee golly, what's going on here? And as I said, I think one of the great strengths of the Haitian people is that they're resilient. I think that they have great hope and they are always looking for a better tomorrow. And they will do what they need to do to develop themselves, develop their country, and keep moving forward.
Thank you so much, Susan, and we'd love to have you back sometime to talk about the progress that you're making.
I would love to come back. Many thanks for having me this morning.